I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. One of the finest and most recognized voices in the city and this province joins me now. John Ashbridge is a public address announcer at Vancouver Canucks home games. He's done that since 1987. For a couple of years now, he's shared those duties with Al Murdoch. He is, however, best remembered for a 40-year career, most of which was spent at radio station CKNW in their legendary newsroom. I remember many a morning listening to Mr. Ashbridge read the news. We'll reflect on the news on radio, his work at Rogers Arena and the Pacific Coliseum, where he's announced for the Canucks, the Vancouver Giants, as well as Olympic hockey games and more. He began in radio over 50 years ago with stints in Victoria, Prince George, and even Australia. He began at CKNW in 1965, returning in 1967, and again in 1973. He retired there in 2005. He is the recipient of the Radio and Television News Directors Association Lifetime Achievement Award. He is a member of the board of the Royal Columbian Hospital Foundation, and he remains active with Metro Vancouver Crime Stoppers. There's a terrific Mike Cleaver interview that John did a few years ago that's worth listening to, too. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in studio as it were, John Ashbridge. Mr. Ashbridge, good morning.
And you must stop using the Mr. part, because that was my father's name, and he's been dead for a number of years, so you can call me John, or you can call me Ash.
Ash.
Which is a common nickname and the signature that I use.
Yeah, you signed your emails like that, and
yes.
I didn't know if I was familiar enough to call you that.
Please, I mean, you know, if I sign in that way, it's your license to address me that way.
So you've had this 50-year-long career in radio. The best years were those the CKNW years?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And you know, there are people who mourn the fact that those years are over. I prefer to look back on them and realize that those years will never be recreated, will never be the same. I take great pleasure in not only having been there for those good years, but having to help create those good years. Those great years, those wonderful years, those outstanding years, they were a highlight of my life, not just my career.
When we hear of veterans like yourself online talk about the state of radio today, people lament what radio's become. Are you one of those folks?
It's disappointing. I think I lament more what journalism has become. But, you know, you have to wrap your head around the fact that, CKNW is no longer your grandfather's radio station. It's not even your father's radio station. It's not even the one that you helped to build. Nor are any of the others in the market, but you have to wrap your head around the fact that radio and television and, to a certain extent, newspapers and various other forms of online broadcasting, in which we are involved at this very moment, they are there chasing the dollar. It's all based on how much money you send to head office every Friday afternoon. Once you understand that and are able to work within those parameters, then you can start to make it as good as you possibly can.
The years that I listened to NW, when I was a steady listener of it in the mornings, because when I was going to school, I guess, high school and college, I guess 95 to 2005, mm-hmm. years that you were there,
mm-hmm.
You were a vital part of the morning. You'd read the news. I guess, how many times would you read the news in that morning?
Oh, you're being so kind. You're being far too complimentary. Depending on, you know, the various different eras in which I worked, if I was working the co-pilot's shift, what we called the co-pilot shift, I would have been the backup to the main person who came in the middle of the night, so I would have done the 6:30, 7:30, 8:30, you know, morning newscasts, and then probably, depending on whether or not we were still doing news on the half hour after 9 a.m., I would do the headlines at 9:30 and or the news at 10 or 11 or noon. It varied over the years.
So what would your day be like, say? Would you come in at 5 or earlier than that?
Around about 5, 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was done by noon, 1 o'clock. I mean, in the last year or so that I worked at CKNW, I was in at somewhere around about 4:30 or 5 in the morning, and I think I was on the air with headlines or a newscast at 6:30 and 7:30, and I wound up my day doing the major newscast at noon, and then actually doing a half-hour sort of time filler talk show until 1 o'clock from 12:30 to 1. So it varied over the years. But
and in the time that you were at NW for between 73 and 05, weren't you also in management? Did you have some role there?
Oh, I was in management off and on throughout all of the years that I was at NW. I mean, I started out really as a fill-in summer replacement board operator / disc jockey / fill-in newsreader. That was in 1965. I actually started at Theater Under the Stairs, the CJOR studios in the basement of the Grosvenor Hotel, where a lot of talent in this market either got its start or made a stop. And I went to NW in the spring of 65, and I was hired more or less to fill in for various DJs and news people who would be on holidays over the course of the summer. And at the end of the summer, management said to me, you know, you're okay, kid. I mean, I was all of 18 years old. You know, we'll keep you on. And I worked a few months doing a variety of different on-air shifts. Virtually everything except Bob Hutton's morning show, the breakfast show. I was the fill-in for Wally Garrett on Fiesta. I was Jack Webster's operator between 9 and noon, operator / co-host. I filled in for Norm Groman doing the afternoon show. I filled in for Frosty, who was still doing the afternoon drive show. I even filled in for Jack Cullen. And yeah. I think I even worked an overnight shift filling in for the legendary all-night man Jerry Davies, I mean, all of whom have, or many of whom have passed on or moved on to, certainly on to retirement. So I worked all of those shifts in addition to doing a little bit of news work, and news work was the basis of what I was doing at CJOR. And at the end of that, you know, that first 6 months or so at CKNW, I went to management and said, I really feel more comfortable doing news. And they said, okay. So I wound up being an outside reporter, being an inside desker, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah. That voice, though, when you started out in radio, was that always there?
Well, people say, I mean, you know, were you born with that voice? Well, of course not. No. No, I mean, I knew at a fairly young age what I wanted to do. I wanted to be on the radio. I wanted to be in radio. Yeah. I mean, I started out in high school as an operator in Victoria, at hanging around CJVI, making a nuisance of myself, and then ingratiating myself to CFAX when it was still a 1,000-watt daytimer. We were with a staff of probably half a dozen people. That was it. So I knew that I wanted to do this, and all I did was I emulated, I copied, I listened to some of the Vancouver stations while I was still in Victoria and tried to sound like them.
Yeah.
And so when I went and did an audition before I even graduated from high school in 1964, which shows you how old I am, I went in and did an audition, and I can still remember the program director at CJOR at the time, Jerry Gahn, said, you know, this was the middle of March. Boy, you know, for a young guy, you know, you seem to be able to read well, and you don't have any fright about talking to the audience. Could you start at the end of this month? And I said, well, no, I'm not really through school. He said, oh, you still got to finish university. I said, no. I said, I've still got to finish high school. He said, how old are you? And I was 17 years old. So I actually, in the middle of March, 1964, secured a job, and I started in the Vancouver market June the 28th or 29th. It was the Canada Day holiday weekend of 1964. So I've been on the air literally 50 years.
And so, I mean, most people look at their careers as a job. For you, it was beyond that. It was a real love of the medium, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I still haven't retired. Let's face it. I'm still on the air in this market, doing Crime Stoppers, doing the occasional odd liner for various different shows and different stations. So, I mean, I'm still heard on the air. But I do it because it's fun. I mean, my wife keeps reminding me, you know, you got everything but a source of income, buddy. Well, that's quite true. I mean, I do it because it is fun. And when it ceases to be fun, it's time to get out.
Your wife, incidentally, a great journalist herself.
Yvonne Ebor.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I still hear her from time to time on CBC Radio. She's remember her from NW, great reporter.
Well, she's the source of my support, financially at least.
Do you get recognized, by the way, when you're out and about with that voice?
Oh yeah, it'll happen occasionally. I mean, it depends on, you know, it depends on not usually CKNW fans from a zillion years ago, but hockey fans. I mean, if I happen to chat up a cashier and they sort of look at me quizzically and go, "Aren't you?" Well, it depends. You know, are you a sports fan? Oh yeah, I'm big Vancouver Canucks fan. Well, okay, I probably annoyed you in person then if you've gone to the rink. And I mean, it's a standing joke. It's not a common thing. But I will you know, turn to Yvonne and say, you know, you're right. You can't take me anywhere, can you?
So how many games a season do you do?
I've cut back now. I have, in the last couple of years, I cut back to half, and then I 2 years ago cut back to doing about a dozen, and this year I'm doing about a dozen for the Canucks. I'm very much the backup boy, and I've cut back to doing about a dozen for the Vancouver Giants, and one thing that you missed in your introduction is that I'm also the backup boy for the Vancouver Canadiens baseball. So, you know, I still, as Jim Robson does not say, I'm still able to get out to the occasional game. I'm not one of the shut-ins, although I am a pensioner. And I'm, you know, able to still keep myself involved in that. At the same time, I'm still doing a lot of work for the Vancouver Canuck alumni. I mean, again, that's all volunteer, but it's fun to do. It's hang around with kids your own age.
I guess what compelled me to ask you on the program was because when Derek Jeter retired, I guess there was a lot of talk about Bob Shepard and his role at Yankee Stadium as a public address announcer. Yeah. Well, were there people like that you looked towards, like, say, I don't know, the people in Toronto, like Paul Morris or Andy Frost?
Nope. None of the above. I fell into the job almost by accident, and I think it's been discussed far too much in far too many different places, but the very simple fact of the matter is that John McComb was the PA announcer for the Vancouver Canucks, and at the end of Expo, John McComb and I traded shifts. And he went to work my 2-10 shift. I had spent the entire year down at the Expo site, and I had done a couple of games as his backup, and the Canucks said to me, well, McComb isn't available. Are you? Because you've done a couple of games, you seem to know how it's done. And I said, yes. And again, you know, same answer. The rest is history. Yeah. I mean, I've parlayed that into a better than 25-year career, and I think arguably it is one of the things for which I am best known, if I am known in any way.
And so, in terms, I mean, you obviously don't just show up at the rink and then start talking. There is preparation involved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So what's your night like, say?
Well, my night starts in the day. I mean, I go online. I go to my NHL media website. I download the game notes. I have a look at who's in the lineup. I find out who the officials are. I plug the officials into technology. It's a wonderful thing. I plug the officials into my game night script, which is hidden on a computer someplace, I think, in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. The information is there for me when I get to the rink. In the meantime, I'll go and look at the pronunciation guide and make sure that I know how to say the players' names, and I have a look at the milestones and see if anybody's coming up on their 100th or 200th or 300th goal or point or that sort of thing. And I get there 2 hours ahead of time and generally refresh. And it's more difficult for me to do now than it was even 2 or 3 years ago because I'm not doing it currently, game after game after game. And the same thing with the Vancouver Giants. I always start my work in the morning. In fact, I do a little bit of extra work in helping them prepare their scripts for you know, any given game. So, you know, there are those things that have to. You don't just walk in the door, sit down, and say, you know, good evening, folks. Sit down, shut up, and pay attention.
Yeah. So, for you as a sports fan, I mean, that must be a great gig.
Well, you don't necessarily have to be a sports fan. In fact, I would suggest to you it's a detriment because you've got to keep your mind on what you're doing. I mean, you can't sit there and watch the game. You know, I've got to be prepared to honk the goal horn when the puck goes in. I've got to be prepared not to honk the goal horn when you and half the crowd think the puck has gone in. I've got to know what the referee is going to say, what the hand signals mean. I've got to sit there and sort out the time as a fraction of 20 minutes. You know, there are any one of a number of different things, and make sure that I have my script prepared in front of me for the next time out and know when that's going to come. So, you know, there are a number of things to do. Yeah. And on a busy night, you know, people will say to me, wasn't that a great game? Well, yeah, the parts that I saw, but I don't necessarily profess to have seen the entire game.
Yeah. And so when you're not at the rink and you're not announcing, do you watch the games at home on TV?
Oh, yeah. I watched the entire game. We're recording this on a Sunday, and I watched an entire Vancouver Canucks Hockey Night in Canada Saturday night game last night and watched a piece of the BC Lions game that preceded it until I realized that they were going to have another dreadful outing, sadly. And I have a game coming up this next Friday with the Vancouver Giants, and I have a game coming up a week from Wednesday with the Vancouver Canucks. So, I mean, you know, there's enough there to keep me off the street, but at the same time, it also pays me to keep as current as I possibly can by keeping up with the game and, you know, what's happening on the ice.
So you're enjoying life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It sure beats the alternative. No, I'm having a wonderful time.
Yeah. You rattled off some names earlier of people that you worked with. You'll indulge me, perhaps. I'll just
please
throw a name and then you can give us some thoughts that you have.
Please.
I had Frosty Forrest on last week. You worked with him closely for
and
a number
Frosty
of years.
And I trade emails almost every day, and we have lunch with a couple of other colleagues every 4 to 6 weeks, and Frosty is Frosty. I'm probably better friends with Frosty now than I was during the time that we worked, because, you know, he was on the other side of the glass, and I was there to interrupt his show a couple of times each morning, and he was gone by the time sort of the morning rush hour pressure was off me. So, you know, we didn't really spend much of a social life, but we see each other on a far more social basis as far better friends, I think, now.
The guy that followed Frosty, Rafe Mayer.
I sat with Rafe the other night at the Webster Awards. It's the first time I have talked to Rafe in, it's got to be a couple of years. His health is not the best these days, but, you know, we all get old. His late wife and I went to high school together.
Patty
McMicking and I went to school together, and I just last year went, sorry, this year I went to my 50th high school reunion in Victoria. Sadly, Patty passed away a few years ago, but I guess when people say, you know, did anybody famous ever come out of your class, I would always say, well, it was myself and Patty and the late former head of the BC Medical Association. There are other, you know, famous people, obviously, but those are the three that I would always cite.
Didn't John McKeachy go to the same high school?
Went to Victoria High School. Yeah. McKeachy graduated 3 years ahead of me, and John and I worked together at NW, and he was toiling away in the basement of the Douglas Hotel at CKDA several years before I was toiling away in the penthouse of the Central Block at CFAX.
Yeah. A guy that I had on early on when I started this 10 years ago was Gary Bannerman.
Yep.
I thought the world of him because he was a nice guy to me personally. You worked with him too at NW?
Worked with him. Gary and I had our back and forth. I was ostensibly his supervisor for a part of the time, and so there was always a bit of administrative friction, employer employee, and co-employee. There again, I mean, many was the time that whenever we took the show on the road, I would usually go because I had the capability of being able to not only do the technical work but also produce the program. So I spent, you know, a week, weekend, a night on the road with Gary and at various different remote locations. I mean, if it was something, you know, more strange than sitting in the studio, I would usually get tabbed to be one of the people who went along and held the talent's hand.
Yeah, and Jack Webster, was he the best at say, the open line?
Well, Jack was a pioneer in that.
Yeah.
I worked with Jack all too briefly because he left NW and went to CJOR in the early 70s, I recall. It was when I was in Prince George, and by the time I came back, he was just making the transition from radio to television. So Jack was swallowed up by that great big horrible thing called TV. But we did get a chance to reconnect at several BC Association of Broadcasters and Radio Television News Directors Association conventions where I would always be asked to sit down and talk to Jack as a former colleague or help him prepare for in those days, his memory was starting to slip a little bit. And I still work, as I say, I still work closely with the Webster Foundation. I just happen to have been on holidays the last couple of weeks. But while I was on holidays, the Webster Foundation called me or sent me an email and said, oh, we need some Voice of God announcements. And yeah. So while sitting on a beach in the Caribbean, I recorded some announcements for them and then went to the dinner and sat next to Rafe Mayer. And, you know, across the table from Vicky Gabbro all of Wednesday evening of last week. So, yeah.
Yeah. In your newsroom, you work with... I got to clear my throat. I guess you have to... I ought to ask you tips on how to maintain one's voice and keep it...
I'm not the one to ask, believe me. I have no clues as to that, and my voice is not what it used to be, because I don't use it all the time, frankly.
Yeah. So talk to us about some of the people. I mean, your wife, great name in that newsroom over the years. You got to work with everybody, I guess, that went through that NW newsroom from, I guess, the 70s on to the...
I got to work with some of the greats, and yeah. I got to work for one of the greats, Warren Barker. I mean, there are those of us who were in that newsroom in that era who will all say to a man and or woman, he taught us. He taught us about news. He taught us about what it was, you know, what it was about. I can't read, you know, there's no other way to summarize it better than that, that he taught us news.
And... Do you find that's, I mean, we've already touched on this, that the traditions that perhaps he instilled in the NW newsroom at the time that he was there, do you think those things are lost now?
I wouldn't say the traditions. I would say the precepts. I mean, it's a fundamental of democracy that there will be a free press. I hate the word press because it means yeah. you have printing presses in the back room and we don't. But there will be a free flow of information. And... it's up to the media to stick up for that. It's up to the media to continue to do that. And the media is not sticking up for itself in doing that, at least not the broadcast media. I mean, there was a time in this fair land, if I can quote Gordon Lightfoot, when broadcasters had to promise to inform and entertain. And that's the preamble to the Broadcasting Act, or was in those days.
Yeah.
If you're going to use the public's airwaves, you have to inform and entertain. You have to use them to do those two things. And I always took that as being a 50-50 proposition. Sure, I'll entertain you, but yes, I will also inform you. I have to inform you. And now, I mean, you know, stations don't have to do news. And perhaps it's a good thing, I mean, because they don't do it well. Other stations that cannot afford what is a pretty serious charge... financially, to play music, have opted to go all spoken word, and a lot of them have gone to an all-news, all-talk type format. Some do it well, some do not.
Are there people in this market today that you think do it well?
I think CBC does. I think CBC has done it much better than they have in the past, and it shows in mm-hmm. their ratings. Now, maybe it's because... private sector is not doing it as well.
Yeah.
Yes, there are more things that I think some of the private sector stations can do in terms of spoken word, in terms of news, but that's, you know, that's not for me to say.
Yeah.
That's for somebody else. That's for, if you want to pay me as a consultant, I'll tell you what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing, but I'm not going to give you the free advice now.
People do ask you for advice, though, don't they?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it's good advice or not, I just hope I don't mislead anybody. That's all.
Your years on the air, as I said, we think of a career as a job. But I mean, what stands out for you in terms of the most memorable? Say,
oh,
I mean, you had a pretty rewarding career, though.
I guess. Every day was fun.
Yeah.
Every day was fun. I always swore that, you know, when it stops being fun, I will get out. I can't really single out anything that was a pinnacle of my career. I can certainly point to a number of different awards that I have been most fortunate to receive, a number of honors, and I mean, you know, They're not small potatoes. You know, a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Radio Television News Directors Association, the International Civilian Volunteer of the Year, worldwide, for Crime Stoppers. I devote my time to that. The NHL Alumni Seventh Man Award, given to only one person every year who never played the game, who works behind the scenes. And I can single out those three just off the top of my head as achievements to which I can point out. Chorus Radio. I mean, we were never the fastest of friends when Chorus was moving in to take over the former the Wick Empire, the former Griffiths Empire. But they honored me with, I think it was their first ever Lifetime Achievement Award. So, I mean, you know, there are any one of a number of different honors that I have received, and I sort of, I guess, collectively look back at the things that I have done over the years, and somebody has said, you know, there's nothing that he did that was really all that special, but, you know, damn it, he did a lot of stuff, so we should say thanks.
You mentioned that you would stop when it wasn't fun. So in 2005, when you did leave CKNW, was it no longer fun?
I was actually ready to go a year before that, but I knew that there were a couple of awards coming down the pike, and to be honest, between us girls, I just didn't want to seem to be ungrateful. And so I stayed a little bit of extra time, but I was able to retire at the age of 59, I think it was. Yes, it would have been 05. To a certain extent, yes, I have to answer your question, that it had ceased to become as much fun. You know, the station was cutting back, and Frosty had just left. Not that that influenced me one way or the other. I mean, I was actually ready to go, you know, 6 months before he pulled the pin. Mm-hmm. But I could see that the time was up, and I mean, I'm still having fun. I'm still having a great time. You know, so long as my health holds out, and yeah, I've had a few potholes on the road of life lately with health issues that have had to be addressed, and they've been addressed quite successfully, thank you very much. As we are recording this interview, I am midway between my house and Vancouver Hospital, where I visit every Sunday as a member of the Pacific Open Heart Association, to basically spread terror on the cardiac ward and visit with people who have had or are about to have open heart surgery. And essentially, I'm going there of my own time every week to say, hey, it's not so bad. Yeah. I mean, I'm living proof that, you know, if you don't smarten up, you'll wind up looking like me, so you know, get better and get out of here. But no, but, it, you know, you can survive open heart surgery. You will be well. And yes, these are the things that your doctors or nurses may not tell you that, you know, don't worry, you'll be back on your feet before Christmas, sort of thing. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm having fun doing that. This morning I just finished up the details on two Vancouver Canuck alumni hockey games, and we play our games strictly for charity. So, I mean, I'm able to put something back into the community that way. I'm a member of the Royal Columbian Hospital Foundation board. We've just had a change of our president, and there are wonderful things happening at the hospital, and I had meetings there last week. I have meetings coming up next week. So, you know, I mean, it's the life of the busy retiree. But I find it, I guess, it's fun. Even more than that, it's rewarding. Yeah. And going to work no longer gets in the way of doing those rewarding things. Not that going to work was not in those days rewarding. Now it's just a smaller part of my life.
In terms of the news stories that you covered, was there something that stood out in terms of something that you broke? Or
well, back in those days, I mean, NW,
they were tough.
We ran the table. Yeah. We set the news agenda. I can't single out any one specific. I mean, there were a number of different stories. You know, just one that's just popped to mind was not even while I was at CKNW. It was while I was in Prince George, where I spent 3 years in the early 70s. I was the news director, and the premier at the time, W.A.C. Bennett, was going for a tour of the province, as he quite often did, and he was passing through town on B.C. Rail, which the government owned in those days, in his own private rail car, and I managed to hang around outside his rail car long enough in the PGE yards in Prince George to That's right. It was the old PGE, not BC Rail. So that shows you how old I am. And managed to convince his aides that the local news director here would like to have an interview with him. And W.A.C. Bennett rarely did interviews. And he granted me, you know, 15 or 20 minutes of his time. And during the course of that interview, the budget was to be presented in the fall or in the spring. I forget what time of year it was. Anyway, the budget was coming up. And he made mention of the fact that there would be a deficit. And it was just a passing reference. And I went away and then I listened to the interview and thought to myself, wait a minute, deficit, social credit, W.A.C. Bennett. There is something wrong with this, and I had to go and in those days, you didn't have Google. You didn't have the ability to go back and research Hanser. We didn't have Hanser, yeah. For God's sake. I mean, you know, yeah. So there was no record of proceedings in the legislature, but I had to go back and look for clippings, or it took me a day or so to sort out the fact that, wait a minute, BC has never had a deficit. And here was the premier and finance minister, because mm-hmm. he held yeah. on to that portfolio very tightly,
yeah.
Admitting... And by the time that I got it sorted out, the impact of this story, W.A.C. Bennett was gone on his private rail car up the Dease Lake extension and was gone for 2 weeks, and I had a two-week exclusive on that story. Now, big deal, but it was still an exclusive. The fact that B.C. would be announcing a deficit at the next budget, and I remember when he came back to Prince George, because the Dease Lake extension had to come back to Prince George, there were all manner of Greater Vancouver media people with whom I had worked before, and people from the Legislative Bureau in Victoria, and the one question they wanted to ask was the one question that I had asked 2 weeks beforehand. Yeah. So, I mean, that stands out in my mind as being something where, you know, a skilled reporter, a curious reporter, a reporter who wasn't really willing to accept things on face value, gotcha, W.A.C. You thought you were going to slide that one by, and he probably didn't realize that I had worked in major market. He would have probably said to himself, it's a young guy from, you know, the school who's just trying his first job in radio here in Prince George, and, you know, and he would be able to say in all honesty, oh, no, I talked about that weeks ago, deficit, no, not news, not news.
Do you think radio can be relevant today?
Sure can. Yeah. Sure can. I think relevant in terms of the way it's reinventing itself. Newspapers have reinvented themselves, and I think, you know, CKNW, a good example. They have started to reinvent themselves. How successful they'll be, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I hope so.
I mean, people look to ratings and the sort. I mean, I think if one's looking for innovation in any medium, I don't think ratings are necessarily the only barometer.
Well, I don't think that either. You and I are reading from the same songbook. The problem is that the people who own the stations and the networks are reading from an entirely different songbook. It's called a spreadsheet, and it's, again, based on the amount of money that you send in from head office. Hopefully, head office has learned, and I think they have, that, okay, maybe those guys out there in the colonies, they know what they're doing, and maybe we shouldn't mess too much with what appears to be a measure of success that they've had. Otherwise, if we mess around with it, you know, we're going to get even less money from them. So, you know, let the people who know do the job and make the money for you.
This has been such a great pleasure for me to have you here and to talk to you about your work and your career. I really appreciate you coming in to do this.
Sure, I appreciate being asked. I mean, you know, as I said, I don't get invited out too often, so this is fun for me.
Well, this is such a delight for me. I mean, when you get to talk to someone that you grew up listening to.
If you can ever be accused of growing up.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. John Ashbridge of your Vancouver Canucks joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.